Have you heard the news? Everyone's talking. Life is good because everything's awesome. Blue skies, bouncy springs, we just named two awesome things. A Nobel Prize, a piece of string. You know what's awesome? Everything. Dogs with fleas, allergies, a book of Greek antiquities, brand new pants, a very old vest. Awesome items are best. Everything you see or think or say is awesome. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when you're living out the dream. Sorry if you wish I would have sung those words. Some of you know those words well. They are from the Lego movie, which I looked back on and was actually out, I think, 9 years ago now, which, you know, I'm getting to the age where every movie seems like, oh, that was just a year or two ago that it was out, when it was actually much longer. But the main character of that movie is a guy named Emmett, and Emmett thinks that everything is awesome. Now, on one hand, that's a good thing, I think, because it's great to be able to find joy and significance in little things in life. But, on the other hand, you could ask the question, if everything is awesome, then is anything awesome? I mean, if everything's the same, then how do you have anything that is awesome? And really nothing could be awesome then. So we face the struggle, if we can't figure out what is or isn't awesome, then maybe nothing is, and maybe we can end up slipping into apathy. And that's the subject that we're thinking about in this series. This is week three of a series called From A to Z, From Apathy to Zeal. And the question that I lay before you is, what if we have lost the sense that there are things that are truly awesome? What if we don't know what they are? How do we gain or regain a sense of fervor or passion or zeal? A couple weeks ago, I gave you a long-winded definition of the word apathy, and someone after that service said to me, the way that I define apathy is blah. So how do we go from blah to fervor, to passion, to zeal? And the subject of zeal is one that we can find throughout the scriptures. So the psalmist wrote these words, "Zeal for your house will consume me." And centuries later, the apostle John, writing his narrative of the life of Jesus, used those same words to describe Jesus. Jesus was consumed by zeal for God's house, for the temple. So if we want to be like Jesus, if we're followers of Jesus, we want to be like him, how do we also have zeal? And it's important, how do we have zeal for the right things? Because, I mean, we live in a culture that can be zealous for all kinds of things. And we might wonder sometimes, are we zealous for the right things? Take a well-known brand that changes its logo, and you will find people getting passionate. You know, take a soda company that changes its formula, and people will get passionate. Take a sports team that changes its name, and you'll find people who are zealous. You know, watch a politician making an important speech, and then doing something like, you know, walking over to take a drink of water during the speech. And, you know, after a gaffe like that, what do people focus on? I mean, forget the content of the speech. Everyone's talking about the drink of water or whatever it is. I mean, we don't always know what to be zealous about. We get confused, and the confusion you could probably find just in watching the news. One stand-up comic kind of imitates the way that the news stories often go. There were no survivors. And next, which candy bar helps you lose weight? Still to come, there's an asteroid heading towards Earth. But first, where to find the cheesiest pizza in town? And so what do we care about? What should really concern us? Where should we focus our zeal? We can get confused about that. And so this series is really trying to help us get zealous for the right and the best things. Now, there are many sources of apathy, many sources of the blah. And we could talk about doubt, we could talk about grief, we could even talk about a lack of discipline and the way some of those things can contribute to apathy in our lives. But there's one particular thing I want to zoom in on this morning, and it is this: a lack of meaning and purpose. That can be a major contributor to a lack of zeal in our lives. If we don't have a sense of meaning, if we don't feel like we have a purpose, if we lose a sense that there is a why behind what we do, then it can be awfully hard to care and to be motivated to do anything. And so I want to take you this morning to 1 Corinthians 15, to that text that Olivia read for us earlier, and we're going to walk through parts of it again. And we want to think about, how is it that we could gain or regain that sense of zeal, of fervency, of passion, if we've lost it? And in particular, how could we find it by finding a new sense of meaning, a new sense of purpose? So I hope you'll turn there with me and follow along. This is a letter written by the Apostle Paul in the first century. He's writing to Christians in the city of Corinth. And in this letter, what he's doing is he's trying to answer questions that they had or to address problems that he heard they were having in their little church. And one of those issues that he zeroes in on in chapter 15 is the idea of Christian resurrection. See, there were some in the church who were doubting the idea that Christians would be resurrected. In the culture of that day, the Greco-Roman culture of the first century, the prevailing idea was that when a person dies, they just become a floating spirit in some spirit world. And Paul, speaking to the Corinthians, says, that's not the way it is. No, there is a resurrection. Followers of Jesus will actually experience a bodily resurrection, not unlike the bodily resurrection that Jesus himself experienced. And it's important, Paul says, because if there's no resurrection of the dead, and in verse 13 and following, he says, if there's no resurrection of the dead, then not even Jesus has been raised. And if Christ has not been raised, then our preaching is useless. Your faith is useless. You're still in your sins. Those who have died are lost, and we are of all people most to be pitied, Paul says. So there's a source of apathy for you, if all of those things are true. So Paul starts with resurrection insight as a way of helping the Corinthians to feel a renewed sense of meaning and purpose. And maybe it can do that for us too. So I just want to read the first couple of verses here as we begin. It says, "Now, brothers and sisters, I want to remind you of the gospel I preached to you, which you received and on which you have taken your stand. By this gospel you are saved, if you hold firmly to the word I preach to you, otherwise you've believed in vain." So before Paul really delves into the subject of resurrection, instead he kind of zooms out and he says, here is the gospel that I preached to you. Here is the good news that I brought to you. And it is a big deal. I mean, this is the news that you received. It's the message that you have taken your stand on. It is the resting place, the foundation for your faith. It's what holds you steady. It's the gospel by which you're saved, delivered, rescued, healed. This gospel is a big deal. It's so important, he says. And he hasn't said a thing about resurrection yet. He's talking about this overall message. He's zooming out. And I would encourage you, if you find yourself having lost a sense of purpose, lost a sense of meaning, maybe you also need to zoom out. Maybe you need to zoom out. Now, Paul's not the only one to do this. I mean, we can go to accounts of the early church, which for us are in the book of Acts in our Bible. And we can see that in those early sermons that are recorded for us, we can find that the focus was always the resurrection of Jesus. But more often than not, the sermons included a little bit of a zoom out history lesson. So you could look in Acts chapter 2, you could look in chapter 3, you could look again in chapter 7, 13, 17. And each of those sermons sort of zooms out and it might talk about the history of Israel leading up to Jesus. Or it might even talk about all of human history leading up to Jesus. The idea is to put the teachings of Jesus and even to put the audience's own lives in the context of what God was doing in the wider world. I hope that that is one of the values of what we do here on Sunday morning, is that in the midst of the grind, you feel the grind sometimes week to week. In the midst of, and I feel it too, the midst of our working, eating, sleeping, mowing grass, sneezing, kinds of paying the bills lives. I mean, we can just sort of get caught up in the everyday, the every week. And we can lose a sense that our lives have a greater meaning and purpose, that they're part of something bigger. We need regular reminders of the bigger story that we are part of. Uche Anazor, who is an author that wrote a book called Overcoming Apathy, and I'm using a lot of what he teaches in this series, he says this: when we lack a large life-unifying story, we find ourselves in the Wild West of little narratives. Narratives about money, fame, or power that end up providing no meaning, no perspective, and only greater confusion about what is significant. Thankfully, however, God tells us who we are, our place in his drama, and what really matters. We are not the cure to our apathy. God, Father, Son, and Spirit is. It is what he did and continues to do on the stage of human history that makes all the difference. So we have to see sometimes, kind of zoom out and see how big and how wondrous and how world-changing and even how awesome this story that we're part of is, that God is working in the world. And we need to remember where ultimately all of this is going. Now, if you'd like a simple, kind of straightforward, even beautiful way to do that, I have a suggestion for you. This is the Jesus Storybook Bible. And we give this to families when we have their children dedicated. So the Burns family just got this. This isn't theirs, by the way. They got to keep theirs. This is my copy. We gave it to them, and we give it to families. It's a kid's Bible storybook. And yet, the first time that I read it just for myself. It just so beautifully captures and kind of summarizes the overall story of the Bible. So, I mean, yes, this is going to give you the bigger, more complete picture. But if you find yourself getting lost along the way, if you miss the forest for the trees, then this is a great way to, in very simple language, it's only a couple hundred pages, recapture again the story, the big story that we're part of. We all occasionally need to zoom out. If you're a follower of Jesus, you need to recapture a sense of the big things that God has done and is doing in the world. If you're not a Christian, well, first of all, I'm glad you're here and that you're listening in to what we're doing this morning. And I would encourage you to ask yourself, do you think that you're part of something bigger, that you're part of a bigger story? Or, I mean, what do you base your sense of what reality is and where, if anywhere, that it's going? I mean, we all do well to answer that question. Why do we believe what we believe foundationally? What is underneath the beliefs that we carry? Now, by virtue of what I do, of course, I'm convinced that the Christian story has plenty of meaning and purpose, and even more so than the other options in the world. But what do you base your convictions on? What do you base your sense of greater meaning and purpose on? Now, I realize if you're apathetic, it can be hard to care enough to look. But I'd invite you to do that, to look. And I'd suggest to you that a sense of meaning and purpose might even be closer than you think. And it's there, if you are willing to look. I mean, for none of us is a sense of higher purpose in life just going to show up and ring the doorbell. I mean, we're going to have to look for it. But I believe it's there. I believe God has it for us if we're willing to seek it. So get the big picture. Zoom out. The second suggestion I'd make to you, if you're looking for renewed meaning and purpose, is to get clear. To get clear. I'll explain what I mean in a moment, but back to 1 Corinthians 15, verse 3. Paul says, "For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures, that he appeared to Cephas," that is, to Peter, "and then to the 12, and then after that to more than 500, and then to James, his brother, and to all the apostles, and last of all, to Paul." What I want you to specifically notice there is Paul's comment that he passed on what was of first importance, he says. It's of first importance. What is of first importance? Well, Christ died. So Jesus did not just swoon from the blood loss and then later on revive. He was actually dead. He was placed in a tomb. He was there for two nights. And then, the tomb was empty. He was raised back to life. And that wasn't just hearsay. It wasn't just rumors. He appeared. He was seen. There were eyewitnesses testifying, willing to die, saying that they saw him in the flesh. Paul says that is of first importance. We need to know it. For the Corinthians in the first century and for us today, it can give us a sense of confidence and a sense of passion. You know, in a day when we struggle to figure out what is really important, I mean, is everything important? Is nothing important? The story and the message and the mission of Jesus, if you're a Christian, I would lay before you, are of first importance. But then I'd like to take that a step further. I mean, those are the things that are of first importance, but then there is more. And I would invite you to know what matter to you. What are the matters that matter specifically to you? Within the context of that bigger story of Jesus, life, death, resurrection, what are the other matters that matter to you? What are the values? What are the convictions that matter to you? What are the causes? What are the activities that matter to you? What's on your list? If you have a sense that the zeal in your life, the sense of meaning and purpose in your life is fading, maybe what you need to do is get clear on the things that are bottom line, foundationally important to you. What matters to you about God, about faith, about the world? What are the non-negotiables in your life? Anazor says this: make a list of the things about which you will not budge regarding how your life is oriented or directed. Revisit that list periodically, reminding yourself before God of who you are, what you value, and what you want to be characteristic of your life. What's on your list? So, just to illustrate a few things on my list. Now, they're not hanging on my fridge, but, you know, you get the point. A few things on my list. So, when you talk about values and convictions, I'm absolutely convinced that there is such a thing as absolute truth. that there are things that we can know, that there are things that we can have confidence unshakably in. Now, there's plenty of people in our world today that say, well, it's all just relative. I mean, your truth is yours and mine is mine, and that's that. And to those people, I would say that sounds very absolute to me to say that. But I'm convinced that there are absolute truths that we can believe, and I'm also convinced that we need to be able to communicate those truths, and we need to be able to communicate them with love rather than with anger. That's a conviction that I have. When we talk about a cause that matters to me, one cause on my list is, and if you know my family, you'll know that this is lived out, is adoption. We value that and are glad to continue to support other families that choose to take that step. And when we talk about practices or activities on my list, again, this will come as no surprise to you given what I do, weekly church involvement is super important to our family. Now, that's some things that are on my list. My list doesn't have to be your list, but you have to have a list. And I would urge you, if you're trying to rediscover a sense of meaning and purpose, then revisit your list. What are the values, the convictions, the causes, the practices, the activities? What are those things that motivate you? What are those things that you care about? What are those things that you would die for? What are they? Get clear about them. And maybe you'll rekindle some zeal along the way. And then lastly, suggesting for you this morning, if you're seeking to restore meaning and purpose, I would suggest that you live small. Now, I've been talking about the big story, and now I'm saying live small. Let me explain to you what I mean, but let me first go back one more time to 1 Corinthians 15. And verse 9, Paul says, "For I am the least of the apostles and do not even deserve to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God. But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace to me was not without effect. No, I worked harder than all of them, yet not I, but the grace of God that was with me." Now, Paul had a small view of himself, didn't he? I mean, he says, I'm the least of all the apostles, given his history persecuting the church. I'm the least of the apostles. Had a small view of himself, had a big view of God and of God's grace. So you might think that if Paul has small view of himself, big view of God, that he would think, what I do doesn't really matter. My work, my efforts, what I do, not all that important. And yet he says, by the grace of God, I am what I am, and I worked harder than everybody else. Actually, it was God's grace working in me. So it seems like his sense of the importance of his own work, of his own efforts, was even greater, even with a small view of himself and a big view of God. Paul seemed to believe that small people and small efforts and small activities could be extremely valuable to God. We back up a couple chapters to 1 Corinthians 10. There's this pivotal verse. Whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Let's hone in on that word glory for a second. Glory. Couple different words for it in the original languages of the Bible, the Hebrew and the Greek. One of the meanings behind one of those words has to do with brightness, brilliance, radiance, with light. So when you read about the glory of God, you're reading about the radiance of God, the brilliance of God, the brightness of God. Another one of the meanings of of one of those words that's used for glory is weight. As in, like, step on the scales. The weight of God. The heaviness of God. Or the worthiness of God. Whatever you do, Paul seems to say here, even when you're doing small things like eating and drinking, and I mean, they're, you know, if you don't do them, obviously they're not small. But in the grand scheme of the things we do and how we spend our time, eating and drinking are small things, whatever you do, Paul says, even in the small things, you can do them in a way that showcases the radiance of God. You can do them in a way that shows the weightiness, the worthiness of God. And it's not just big, important things that do that. So how can what's small show God's weight and brightness in our lives? Well, when we focus our thoughts on him, when we're seeking to be aware of him as we do those things, when we're dedicating what we do to him as we do it, when we recognize that it's his grace in us making it possible, when we're thankful to him for what our efforts can do and what he can do through them, in all of those ways, small things can show the brightness, the weightiness, the grandeur and magnitude of God. There's a big city school system that had a program to help kids in the hospital. So while the kids were in the hospital, this program would actually send in a teacher to help those kids keep up with their schoolwork while they were hospitalized. And so teachers were assigned to go. The teachers for the students would send over some suggestions or things that they wanted the visiting teacher to work on with the student, and then that teacher would go. So in one particular case, a teacher went in to visit a boy, and she was asked to go over nouns and adverbs with him. Now this boy, she went in with this assignment, found this boy had serious burns. He was in a lot of pain, very despondent, not very responsive as she was with him. And here she is, she's coming in to teach nouns and adverbs to him. Well, she was there a little bit, not much happened. She didn't feel like she'd accomplished anything, leaves, comes back the next day, and the nurse says, "What did you do to that boy?" And the teacher's like, "I'm sorry. So this was the assignment." And the nurse says, "No, it's not that. We've been worried about him. But since yesterday, his attitude has changed. He's fighting back. He's responding to treatment. It's as if he suddenly decided to live." Well, 2 weeks later, the boy explained that before that teacher came, he had given up hope. And then when she came, he came to a simple realization. They wouldn't send a teacher in to work on nouns and adverbs with a dying boy, would they? And just that small thing was enough to rekindle a sense of meaning and purpose and help him along the road to recovery. Purpose and meaning matter. And they are available to all of us. Knowing how much we're worth to God, shown in Jesus. Knowing our lives are part of a bigger story. Getting clear on what matters to us at a foundational level. Realizing that even the small stuff of our lives can shine the radiance of God and show the weightiness of God. We can go from A to Z. Would you pray with me? Oh God, I pray that you would help us to see both bigger and smaller today. That we would see the bigness of the story that we are in. The story that you have begun and that you will see through to completion and beyond. May we find our lives in that place and not lose sight of that bigger thing that you're doing. At the same time, I pray, Lord, that we would see the significance of even the small things in our lives. And along the way, would you help us, O Lord, to get clear about the things that matter, the foundational things, the life and death, the resurrection of Jesus, so foundational to our existence. And the things that matter to each one of us, may we grasp their significance again and see our zeal rekindled. Through Jesus Christ, I pray. Amen.